You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Hi, welcome back. Mark Tui in on The Rush this afternoon. And of course, the time on the clock says 4:35, so it must be time to bring in people smarter than me to give you their thoughts on some of the topics that we have been talking about and the biggest stories of the week. Joining me today as he scrolls down to make sure I don't screw up their intro, Scott Reed is a CTV political commentator. You know him, you love him, and an advisor to a number of prime ministers, premiers, and political leaders. And Faye Johnstone is co-owner and executive director of consulting firm Wisdom to Action. There you go. I think I got all of those words in there. Let us go to clip number six and hear the Speaker of the Ontario Legislature banishing MPP from Hamilton Centre, Sarah Jama, from the chamber.
Sarah Jama, you are named. You must leave the chamber. As a result of being named, the member for the remainder of the day is ineligible to vote on matters before the assembly, attend and participate in any committee proceeding.
Scott Reed, you've been around the political horn a time or two. This is a parliamentary tradition. The speaker ruled you can't wear the keffiyeh or, frankly, any other sort of political type of attire in the chamber. And she intentionally did that, went in, sat down at her seat. She was named and told to leave the chamber and made public statements afterwards, sort of talking about her position, which she has very heartfelt on the war in Gaza. But I think this kind of, you know, she knew what was going to happen when she went in there today. And so I kind of think she proved the speaker right that this was a political statement attached to this piece of clothing.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting take. And probably correct. My take is that Arnott made a mistake as the speaker, and he should have seen this coming. When he ruled in this way, it almost was a dare to someone. And Jama was right at the top of the list of the someones that, you know, come and do it. Break this, right? You said you heard a kind of a weird political consensus with Ford and opposition leaders saying, yeah, you know what? This should be allowed. And whatever you think of that, the fact that the speaker took the hard line meant that people were being effectively dared to challenge it. Now, that being said, and this is what a rule follower I am, once this protest has been lodged and she's done this, I don't think she should come back into the ledge with it on, but she will. And so I'm kind of in this weird, I got this weird, horrible, like strain on my crotch, kind of straddling both sides of the front fence position, which is, it was a dumb decision to start with. And now we're going, she ought to comply with the speaker's ruling, but she won't. So we'll end up in a bit of a mess, I think.
Before I go to Faye, let me just stick with you on the political procedure side. Like, my take on it was the speaker made that ruling because I think he kind of has to, because you can't even wear a Blue Jays jersey without unanimous consent. He didn't get unanimous consent, so he's upholding the rules as the House, the legislature, has basically decided them to be. All of the political party leaders have said they don't care, but they're kind of stuck on the protocol of it. And so I think the speaker is right, even though politicians might want to make an exception in this case. Am I misinterpreting the rules there? You know that better than I.
Well, I don't know the rules better than you, to be honest, but I do think that these are living precedents. And, you know, the reality is that if there's a will and a consensus, then I think the speaker ought to read the room. And, you know, I think you're in a situation where you split hairs when you start to say what is and is not a political symbol. So someone can come in with a cross. Well, you might say that's a religious symbol. I might say, well, it is a de facto political symbol because I'm not comfortable with the cross. I'm a Protestant. I regard that as a statement of political orthodoxy from a Catholic perspective. Like, you know, these things are hair-splitting decisions. And sometimes you just have to sort of look at the context and say to yourself, what will happen next? Where does this take us? And they've had these debates about cultural symbols in Quebec. I don't think we want to have them here because they are splintering.
Yeah, and a part of this, certainly the positions of the leaders might be influenced by GASP politics, because there's a by-election in Milton, and there's a very strong Muslim community there. There was a debate, and everybody, including the conservative candidate, I think, you know, posed for a group photo in front of, you know, Palestinian flags. But that's the politics of it. Faye Johnstone, you know, rules of procedure and politics aside, what do you think the average Ontarian, when they hear this debate, when they hear that this woman, MPP, was, you know, forced out of the chamber, what do you think the average person has taken away from this?
You know, my take, and I think many folks' take, is can we get back to the business of governing? Can we get back to addressing the housing crisis? You know, I think the speaker made a mistake here. I think this was not the right call. And I would applaud Sarah Jama for, like, she's been through it. And she has stood, you can disagree with her, but she is standing by her values. And I think, you know, this is an act of political protest, and every party does it at different times in different ways. I remember when there was, you know, there are, like, props aren't allowed, but then, you know, an entire caucus can show up in the same T-shirt or the same color T-shirt. Like, there are other ways of making a point. And so I guess what I would get back to is, I think that the speaker should retract his decision. I think that most folks don't want this debate, and nobody benefits from it. So why bother?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think that, personally, I don't think from a protocol and a procedures perspective, the speaker should retract his decision. But he has invited somebody, anybody, please, Bueller, you know, move a private member's motion to, you know, change the rule. And he'd be happy to let that pass on a majority vote. Doesn't need unanimous consent. But let me just follow up with you, Faye, for just a second. Do you think this is doing a disservice to the people who live in Hamilton Center? They elected Sarah Jama to be their representative, their voice in the legislature. And she has a couple of times now run afoul of the rules to the point that she can't really be an effective representative there.
I think she's being an extremely effective representative. I think that she came into office having a background in organizing and progressive movements. Her constituents who voted for her knew who she was. We all did. And so I think she is doing her job. And she, like, I really, you know, representation looks a whole bunch of different ways. There's so many backbenchers in that legislature who don't say all that much in general, who are never in the news, and we don't ask if they're serving their constituents in the way they should be. I think Sarah is serving her constituents by doing exactly what she's doing right now.
Scott, I've got about 45 seconds. Would you agree with that? She's doing a good job as a constituency representative, or no?
No, I don't think she's representing a constituency. I think she's representing her own personal politics and her own personal perspective. But that's also her discretion, and that's her right. You know, I come back to it. Sarah Jamas are going to get elected, and you've got one in this legislature. And if you're the speaker, you knew, you had to know. And if you didn't know, you're a dummy, that she was going to say, hey, this is an opportunity to get kicked out, to be defiant, and to position myself as a hero. I'm going to do it. I probably believe in it, and I'm also going to benefit from it. So you're going to get it.
Yeah, I think that's probably entirely predictable. When we come back, I will not hazard to predict the opinions of our smart speakers, Scott Reed and Faye Johnstone, on this question. Is marriage, the institution of marriage, such as it is, however you may have experienced it, yeah, I had good days, I had bad days. But is that the savior for Canada moving forward? One columnist thinks that it is up to marriage to save our society as we know it. Also, what other institutions of Canadian retail consumerism and history would you put forward as the subject of Canada's next musical after the Tim Hortons one?
You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Hey, welcome back. Mark Tuohy hosting the program this afternoon. I'll be with you tomorrow. I'll be with you tomorrow. But joining us right now and sticking with us, smart speaker Scott Reed, CTV political commentator and advisor to a number of prime ministers, premiers, and political leaders. I think you can add a couple of talk show hosts onto that list as well, because he's given me some advice. Faye Johnstone is co-owner and executive director of consulting firm Wisdom to Action. Let's start with you, Faye, on this one. Jamie Sarkanek is a columnist writing in the National Post saying that only marriage can save Canada. He points out that Statistics Canada reports a person's chances of marrying here is only 44%, down from 74% in 1991, when the rate of marriage was 35 per 1,000 adults. And it's down to 19 in 2019. He goes on to suggest that, Jamie goes on to say
terrible writer and a she
that that marriage is a moderating influence on people. I know it certainly was in my case, but there are other things. I talked with an author of a book, Faye, called The Two-Parent Privilege. It's an American nonfiction book, but it points out that families where there are two parents enjoy economic advantages that are not available to families that don't have two parents. Is marriage the way forward? Do we need to go back to the old ball and chain?
Oh, my. I was cringing the entire time I read this thing. I'm going to not be nice here. Jamie is not a fan of me and has described me in columns in ways that I think were not in the best of graces or lights. So I would say, hey, like, this feels so condescending and controlling. How, you know, you're experiencing, you're young woman and young men who are, you know, living your life and you don't want to get married. And this is Jamie coming in and saying, oh, but maybe you should, because marriage is good. It's the right thing to do. The country is suffering because the institution of marriage is struggling. And I'm just like, is this the 70s? And what is your stance on women's rights? Like, I am astounded by this column. I think it's just a whole lot of shamey and a whole lot of weirdness. And I think if she wants to get married or is married, more power to her. Let other folks live their best lives. And all of the benefits of marriage can basically be translated when you are in a relationship, whether you are married or not.
Scott, it sounds like you're not a fan of the author or the column, but is there not something to be said? And I'm not going to wave the flag very high or very fast for marriage, because I was very bad at it. But is there not something to be said for at least that sort of the family solidity? Is any of that still exist in marriage? You've done marriage. I mean, surely there's something good about it.
I located nothing good about it. Listen, I got all kinds of problems with this column. So first of all, I just want to say this is a drive-by trashing, but God, the National Post is just a piece of trash these days. Just this kind of garbage. And so that's thing number one. Thing number two, would the libertarians and conservatives in Canada pick a lane? Do you want us to just live our lives and be freedom and choice and whatever you want, independent of rules and all the gatekeepers, all that? Or do you want to dictate, like, whether or not I need to be married, whether or not I can get divorced, how Faye lives her life? Like, because it's hard to follow. Because the gatekeepers are all over the National Post gatekeepers are all over what we should and shouldn't do. My final thing is this: the flugelhorn and marriage are the two things in my life that I truly, truly, truly are terrible at. And I don't think that people should be like forced to like, oh, you know what? Because traditionally, there have been economic structures that have benefited those who are married in two couple families. You ought to be married. It's just, I hate everything. I hate this the way bears hate hornets. I hate everything about this column.
And I'm not going to stand up for marriage, although I think there are advantages to it. But I interpreted it less as in you must do this and more as in rah, rah, there's some good things to be said about it. But let's move on to something where I have opinions which disagree with just about everybody else I've ever met. Ontario's child vaccination rates are lagging post-pandemic. About 60% of seven-year-olds are fully vaccinated against the measles, according to Public Health Ontario. And the Peel region chief of public health there says it could take them up to 7 years to catch up. Faye, I say this is the bread and butter of public health, and they should be giving it all the resources that they need. I blame them in part for vaccine hesitancy because they all got sidebarred on, oh, what color should stop signs be? And, you know, what should we make menus look like? Because they were too bored of doing the hard work before the pandemic, and we suffered because people aren't science believers. And I think that, you know, vaccinations is, they should be teaching us, drilling it into us how safe and effective they are.
You had me worried for a moment. You said, you know, your opinion differs from most people, because I don't, I think that is the opinion. That should be the opinion. We need to vaccinate young folks against diseases and against infections. This is simple public health. And I do wonder, like, how much of this vaccination rate is a byproduct of the amount of misinformation and disinformation in our social ecosystem now around vaccines. And that concept terrifies me, because if we are not vaccinating the humans, the risk to all of us gets higher. And I would really, really not like to see that happen.
Scott, where I differ from a lot of people is I think this is what public health should focus on. And I blame them in large part for the hesitancy and the misinformation, because if they were spending less time on politics, they could actually do their job and we'd all get our vaccinations on time.
Blame them. I think that's like a 1% of the problem. 99% of the problem was we had a pandemic. It disrupted the entire world. It set back everybody in terms of the ability to vaccinate against other diseases. And layered massively on top of that, you had this enormous crust of lunatics who decided, you know, that nobody should be vaccinated, that you should be chewing on your placenta or eating like Greek yogurt, and that would be good enough. Sorry, it's not. So that's what's happening. We've had this triumph of misinformation, anti-science garbage, and I don't think it's because of what public health agencies prioritized 8 years ago. I think it's a pandemic and post-pandemic phenomenon, and the only answer is money. You know, you're just going to have to put a ton of money into it in order to double up the ability to vaccinate and get into schools. And then I don't know what you do about the percentage of people who are like, not my kid. Sorry, I've decided that they should eat cigarette butts and that will keep them healthy.
Faye, we're out of time, but after you go to see Tim Horton's Timbits the Musical, would you sign up and buy tickets for, I don't know, Home Depot, the interactive experience?
I think I'm going to pass on that one, but I will eventually taste their new weird pizza thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Tim Hortons fan, although I do slam them once in a while. Scott, are you lining up to go see Timbits, the musical? The last Timbit.
I think it's a genius idea. I think they should be applauded from the rooftops. I love it. I hope it's a huge success.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant marketing, and I hope it's a good show. Anyway, Scott Reed, Faye Johnstone, our smart speakers, thanks for your time.